Toodle-loo-ma-loo-ma-toodle-loo-ma-loo-ma-toodle-i-ay. Any umbrellas to mend today. Bring your parasol, it may be small, it may be big.
So, well, I think we're coming to the end, not just the end of Book Hounds of London, but the end of the old farts, the saga of the old farts, and possibly coming to the end of one or two of the old farts themselves as well. But we will see, because our last session we ended in a very dramatic moment. The auction had commenced on Black Lion Lane in a third floor flat in a rundown tenement in the East End of London, which also coincidentally happened to be right in the epicentre of the murder range of Jack the Ripper. Possibly this is where we found out a little way into the last session that is the very eye of Byattis, the very heart of this malign entity that lurks, that lives underneath the layers, the strata of London going back millennia. And the auction started rather interestingly as our brave heroes carried Louis de Castries up the staircase in a wheelchair, with the blood still dripping from his severed legs. He is missing the lower part of both of his legs, which you had done your best to bandage up and then pumped him full of morphine. And the auction started relatively calmly, with Aston Drummle taking a decisive lead with his years of auction experience and his very fat wallet. Rita was using de Castries as a stooge to mask her sort of subterfuge of having a second bidder in the auction. And she was keeping up relatively well, but the others were floundering and had fallen way back. The rest of the auction participants were obviously Drummle, as I mentioned, and Anthony Fletcher, the astronomer from South Africa, whose sanity seems to be wearing a bit thin himself, as long as a few others in the group. And of course, the hulking and menacing form of McWitch, who you had assumed had been in the pay of Drummle, but seems to now be opposing him in the auction, or at least maybe they're pulling the same sort of ruse that you are. After the first round of bidding, Rita decided to level the playing field a little bit and shot McWitch in the forehead.
I think it was the second round. It was, I think you'll find, listeners.
Yeah.
It's the second round. I waited a jolly long time.
You did. All right. So you waited until after the second round.
You're telegraphing.
No one could ever accuse you of having poor impulse control.
I think he tried to rationalise it as McWitch looks like the one most likely to throw a spanner in the works, and so you decided, let's take him out of the equation, and you did that in the most definitive way.
Now, based on what you're about to say, I clearly made the wrong move, didn't I? Should have shot the other guy.
Perhaps you should have, but we don't know what McWitch would have done, because he's now lying on the floor in a spreading pool of blood with three bullets in his head, at which point all hell broke loose.
There's not much head, really, is there? I think the bullets are on the floor, probably.
Yeah, indeed. Fletcher, deciding that things were definitely going off the rails and not certainly not going in his way, started getting very agitated. Emery decided to put in a collect call to Byattis, and using spontaneous Cthulhu mythos magic, somehow managed to connect and redirect that connection straight into the brain of Aston Drummle.
Yes, one thing I probably should have flagged at the time as well is, I mean, even though that spontaneous use of the Cthulhu mythos and not a spell, it still comes with sand loss and magic point loss.
I know it does, and that's the first thing we're going to do as soon as we start, because yes, there's no way you're getting away with calling a great old one and not taking at least a bit of a sanity hit.
Oh, marvellous.
Yeah, even though you unfortunately didn't observe this monstrosity yourself, that's what's going on inside Drummle's head is probably best left inside his head, as he's quivering on the floor, shaking and convulsing. At which point Fletcher decided that if he wasn't going to be able to get the book, no one else could, pulls out a Mills bomb from his pocket and pulls out the pin. And none of you really noticed something else strange that was going on during all of this, which is unsurprising given how much was going on. The blood that was pooling on the floor around McWitch and dripping down from the leg stumps of poor old de Castries had made its way up the table leg, up Bauer's sleeve. Bauer's, of course, being the man auctioning the Cadi Urbi Vera Clavis, and had soaked into the cover and perhaps you also heard a slight moan of delight coming from inside the book as this was happening, which I've just added as a little embellishment. And that is the point at which all the lights went out. The gas bracket, which was lighting up this small and stuffy room with its strange violet miasma, went out, seemingly snuffed out, and the voice of Donston, or should we call him Jack the Ripper, whispered into Milton's ear that there was just one more to go. One more to go, Milton, and then the eye will be open. And that is where we rejoin the action. So, Scott, you asked for it, and you're going to get it.
When I came in late there, you were talking about grenades or firearms. You know, it was very precise academic discussion. I don't know what's the word.
It was indeed.
And based on the discussion, do we have agreement about the detonation time of the grenade that Fletcher is threatening with us?
We do. I mean, we didn't talk about the detonation time. We talked about...
It's between 3 and 5 seconds or something, isn't it?
Actually, so here's the thing. So at the time in which we're playing this scenario, it was actually 7 seconds, which they then shortened because they realised it was too long a time that the enemy could easily pick it up and throw it back if they had 7 seconds. So
that's interesting.
It's this kind of attention to historical detail which really is what draws me to this, being in this group.
Yeah.
7 seconds. This is good.
7 seconds. But whether you guys know that or not, I don't know whether you would. None of you have ever thrown a grenade before, I would hazard a guess. But anyway, let's leave that for the moment, because more pressingly, I think that Dr. Emery does need to lose some sanity, having called forth Biatis. So it's not terrible. It's only a D6, but given you've only got 19... This probably isn't going to...
And given that any amount of sand is going to send me into another bout of madness...
True. But you are mythos hardened as well, aren't you, at this point,
yes.
I believe. Yeah, so you only...
But I've still lost 5 points.
You have, but you only lose half of that because your Cthulhu mythos is now above your sanity. So I always round up, so you lose 3.
Yep, that is entirely fair.
Why don't you hit the real-time bout of madness button on your character sheet? Well... Flee in panic.
Okay.
I think this makes total sense, does it not?
Yeah.
You can always override that if you feel that that's not appropriate or not going to lead...
I did have something else in mind.
Why don't you do that then? Why don't you do that? Because I think fleeing in panic would be a little bit of a anticlimax.
Too sane, actually, I think.
Yeah, too sane.
Well, it would be an anticlimax and there would be a chance of Emery surviving, which I don't think anyone wants at this stage.
Not if you don't bother with the stairs and you just throw yourself over the banister rail.
There is that.
But yeah, so what would you like to do instead, Emery?
Oh, I think clearly using magic to solve all these problems is working. It's the most efficacious solution and there's no potential danger involved. And there is still that spell bouncing around in Emery's head about folding dimensions. And surely the best way of containing the danger from that grenade is just folding the dimensions around it to contain the blast.
Absolutely. Now, this time you won't need to use Spontaneous Cthulhu Mythos because you know the spell. So I think that's just going to go off. But given that it's also in a bout of madness, I think something could easily go a bit haywire with this.
I'm counting on it.
So I think, obviously, in your mind, you're trying to create some way of enclosing the grenade, I suppose, to stop it from exploding. But we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Now, one thing I would like you all to do is to make a luck refresh, given that we are rapidly approaching the...
Too good to us.
Yeah, I know.
You love bringing in the luck refresh once we've already started, don't you? It's a key feature of your GMing style, Andy. It's good.
I can't believe Scott doesn't.
Yeah, 0-4.
Andy, don't go changing.
Yeah, oh dear. Poor old Emery. He's not going to get any luck. Astrid, who seemed to have spent a ton of luck in the last session, does get a refresh. So does Milton.
Yeah, is it 1d10?
It's a d10.
Oh, I do. Oh, right. Well.
Okay. Yeah, I'm down to 15, so.
Well, you're back up to 19.
Up to 19.
I just rolled a 10 against 23.
Well, that's not great then, is it? given how low all your luck is, the fact that two of you failed is just par for the course, isn't it?
Yep.
So the lights have gone out. You hear Fletcher muttering and babbling in the corner saying,
"Lights have gone out."
Yes. So at the moment at which, well, you don't know this, but the moment at which Jack appeared, it seemed like the gas bracket just went out. So it's almost completely dark in there. Perhaps there's a little bit of light leaking in underneath the door to the corridor.
I think you said there was no windows when we went in, but there is a skylight.
Oh, did I say that?
Yeah, it's a windowless room and there's a skylight.
That's ring a bell.
Oh, yeah, you're right. A small windowless room. Yes, okay, you're absolutely right. Amazing memory. Yeah, so there's no windows. There's just a grimy skylight.
Grimy. Well, yeah, that's it. There's nothing else in there except the grimy skylight. That's...
Yeah, and the gas bracket. And Fletcher calls out, "Who turned the lights out? I'm going to do it. I'm going to kill us all. If I can't have the book, we're all going to go. We're all going to go." And you hear the clonk, clonk, clonk of a grenade being dropped. So...
Oops.
Who wants to do something at this point?
I was going to scrabble for the grenade in the darkness in the hope that I could launch it through the skylight.
Okay, through the skylight. Wonderful, wonderful. Let's do this in dexterity order. So I think probably Astrid will be able... Oh no, Astrid's really slow.
I'm very bad, yes.
Rita, it must be you then, because Milton's dexterity is 20, I think.
Are we all going for the grenade? Is that what you mean? Or is...
In different ways.
What are you?
Is Rita? I don't know. What's Rita doing?
Well, I mean, that was... Yeah, I was going to go for the grenade, but I defer to Spencer, really. I've got a dexterity of 50. I don't...
Yes, but I mean, it is dark. We don't know what anybody's doing, do we?
Yeah, you're all in the dark at this point. Mm. So, Rita, tell me what you'd like to do.
Well, I'm going to go for the flipping grenade as well, if I'm totally honest.
Well, I would like you to make a hard spot hidden roll to see whether you can even see in this grimy half light. Or...
I knew you were going to fucking say that.
Yes.
Can I use fighting brawl?
No. You can maybe use it in a minute, but...
Okay, here we go. Hard spot hidden. I just rolled 86. That's a total fail. Either we're going to Milton or I'm pushing the roll. So, Milton, it's your call.
No, I mean... I'm still going to go for it because I can't see what you're doing in the darkness.
Mm.
So I guess I'm going to try for a spot hidden as well.
Yeah, you will also need to make a hard spot hidden roll, Milton.
Oh, hard.
Mm. Well, it's a 43. Mm. You've got quite a good spot hidden. That's quite a lot of luck. It's, what's that, 16 luck?
16 luck. Well,
that's nothing.
Yeah, I'm going to spend it because I've got 29 luck.
Yeah, you can't take it with you.
So... Exactly. Either that, I'm going to take you all with me.
So you dive forward. Perhaps your bulk is enough. You sort of dive forward and almost bump Rita out of the way as she seems to be heading in a slightly different direction. But
it's probably Rita's arse because she's completely off.
Indeed. Maybe it's Jack whispering in your ear that gives you a little bit of extra fortune. And as you dive forward and get your hands around this 6-inch long ball of explosive metal, the Mills bomb is, you feel it sort of vibrating in your hand as the mechanism is moving inside it, and Jack's voice says,
"Watch out, Milton, you don't want to die yourself. That won't help any of us."
Oh, I was rather wondering if that might solve a problem, kill two birds with one stone, and we need the blood after all. So I'm going to, yeah, launch it towards the skylight, which, given my dex, is probably not the best of ideas.
It probably isn't, but it won't be a dex roll. It'd be a throw roll, which I'm sure you're probably even worse at.
Where are we? 20. Well, we've got... how many seconds have we still got to play with?
I love how terrible this idea is, Milton. I love it. I love it.
You do have a number of seconds, but it's one round for each of you. So Rita has taken her action. Milton, this will be the end of your round by attempting to throw it.
So we're going to throw...
Well, you could push the roll.
Yeah.
Maybe what happens is you throw it and it just misses the skylight and bounces down back into your hands again. So if you want, you could attempt to push the roll by trying to bat it back up into the air through the skylight. That would be, I think, the pushed.
Let's make it...
Or you could just run for it.
As slapstick as possible.
Is there any glass on this skylight?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, so it's bounced off the glass and...
Well, bounced off the frame, let's say, and landed back in your hands. So you could pat it back in the air or you could just let it drop and run.
Just put it in your pocket. Just put it in your pocket. It's going to be fine.
I could catch it and run, couldn't I?
through the door, leave a Milton-shaped outline through the door, in the door.
I wonder if Jack would really let me do that.
I think it would still have to be a pushed roll of some kind. It would either be a pushed dexterity roll or a pushed throw roll.
So I'm going for the skylight again. The second attempt, I'm just going to bat it straight back up.
A push on a 20% skill roll. God love it.
Fantastic.
Oh, so close.
Doesn't quite make it.
No, it doesn't. So that was a 24 out of your 20. It was so close.
If only you could spend luck on pushed rolls.
If only. I'm glad that rule doesn't exist though. So you sort of cup it in your hands as it falls and you try and flick it back up into the air, and it does actually hit the glass, but just not with enough force, and it makes this tinking sound as it rebounds down. And at this point, Wally, you have an opportunity, perhaps your last opportunity, to do something before this Mills bomb goes off.
There are two doors in this room, aren't there? There are two doors in this room.
There are two doors, yeah.
Mm. Are either of the doors open?
No.
No, they're not open. Okay. How large is Magwitch? How big is he? Is he a beefy man?
He is a beefy man.
He's a beefy boy, right?
Yes.
Right? And he's lying on the ground and I know about where he is, right? I've seen this, like, my eyes have adjusted enough to see this happening.
Yes.
Yeah, so, split-second decision, I am going to see if I can, like, shove the grenade under Megwitch.
Fantastic.
Sure, I'd thought of that.
So, we may see a shower of meat in a moment. Who knows? It could be me, could be Megwitch. We'll see.
Okay, I'll give you two options here. Either, if you want to try and grab the grenade, you will also have to make a hard spot hidden roll because it is small. On the other hand, if you want to drag Magwitch over to roughly where the grenade is, then it would be a strength roll against his size. So it would be a hard strength roll.
Okay, my spot hidden is better than my strength by far.
Okay, well in that case, it's a hard spot hidden roll.
I'm going to try for the spot hidden. Are you kidding me? Okay, no.
Well, you can always push the roll. Maybe crawl on your hands and knees.
Yeah, no, at this point, I'm already kind of crawling on my hands and knees to avoid the chaos of everybody being stupid around me. So I'm probably already down there on the ground. So, you know, let's try that again. Are you fucking kidding me?
Oh, God.
And as Rita is sprawled on the floor, Milton is kind of standing there with the dismayed look on his face, even though you can't see it, with Jack whispering words of disappointment in his ear, saying,
"Oh, Milton, looks like I'm going to have to find another friend to carry out the work. I don't think you're long for this world, dear old Milton."
And you crawl forwards and you're desperately patting the ground searching for this grenade, and you just get your hand on it as it explodes.
So Emery didn't get a chance to contain it, or?
No, but Emery, somehow you start seeing things happening. Even though it's dark in here, you can almost, perhaps your madness, your closeness really to these malign forces that seem to be driving forward this tale allows you to see what's happening. And in slow and minute detail, you see Wally's hand reaching out, her elegantly manicured hand reaching out for this grenade and just failing to grasp it. And you can almost see the fragments of metal inside being pushed outwards by the explosive charge inside the Mills bomb. And at that point, your spell goes off.
Yeah, so Emery's been muttering to himself the whole time, going, "Hey, the problem with an explosion is it occurs in the wrong number of dimensions. If one catastrophically reduced the number of dimensions, then there wouldn't be anywhere near as much scope for damage from the fragments from the shrapnel. But on the other hand, if one drastically increased the number of dimensions, then that would also diffuse the effect. Either would be perfectly good. Decide, Emery, decide."
Brilliant. And perhaps some guiding force makes that decision for you, and perhaps you will never know whether you increased or decreased the number of dimensions. Because what happens is, the explosion seems to, you see it happening, you see all your friends being shredded by these hot pieces of shrapnel cascading out of the epicenter of the explosion. And then they seem to almost reverse, the fragments seem to sort of retract back with this popping noise as something very peculiar is definitely happening to the dimensionality of this room. You start seeing forwards and backwards in time, and up and down and in and out and outside and inside all become the same thing. And everything seems to focus down into a single point. The energy from this explosion is all centered in the middle of the room where Bowers is standing with this blood-soaked book. And then you hear this groaning, creaking sound as the walls of the room start to bow and buckle and start to fragment. And then you see the floor seemingly just vanish beneath you. And for a moment, you're all of you, you, Bowers, Drummel, Fletcher, and all your friends, are just suspended in midair. And then you're down, and then you're down somewhere. You've gone through the second floor, the first floor, down through the basement, down through the sewers, down through the layers, the strata of archaeology that make this multi-layered city, this palimpsest of a city of London. And then you're all just lying on this ancient stone floor, in the middle of which there is a huge stone door.
Is the door in the floor or in the wall?
In the floor, like a giant stone trap door.
Okay.
And for all the life, it looks like this must be the Roman ruins that Badger had been so obsessed by from the very beginning. Because, of course, it was a Roman city 2,000 years ago. London was a Roman city. And perhaps now is the moment that you might regret having stirred by Attis, because the stone door creaks open and it comes flooding back to you, Emery, the stone door that you saw in the British Library, the doors that have been opening and closing throughout this whole journey that you've been on. And what you see through that door is, of course, the eye of Biatis opening up. So there he is. He's been waiting here for all of you all this time. His single three-lobed eye opens up in the middle of this gelatinous toad-like head. He does have snakes for a beard and these big claws. And as that single eye plays over all of you, you hear and feel this droning sensation in your brain. The beard snakes start slithering up out of the hole towards you. Everyone has to make a hard power roll to avoid being...
I fucking passed it.
Yeah, same.
Sorry, when I said hard, I meant extreme. I should have checked that. Yes, I'm afraid it's actually an extreme power roll. So if you have any luck left and you're close, of course you can spend luck. So Emery, you would need to spend 14 luck. Do you have it?
Oh yeah, I've got 25. I'm fine. That leaves me with 11. That's plenty.
That is plenty, but that probably was the key roll because...
Yeah.
And Wally, what about you? Do you have 11 luck to spend?
I have 11 luck to spend. Yeah, that gets me down to 8 luck, which is...
Wow.
That's fine. She's way out of her depth here. This is nothing but a series of bad decisions.
And Rita, what about you?
I had to spend 15 luck, so now I'm down to 8, but it's easy.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow. But Milton, perhaps this was always meant to happen, Milton, because you have not made your extreme power roll. And you just start shambling forwards towards this hole, as does Drummel, as does Fletcher, as does Bowers. You're all shambling forwards. And you know of hunger, Milton, and you know of Igonolak's hunger, but nothing can compare to the hunger emanating from Biatis, from this being that's been waiting, perhaps trapped here underneath the stones of London for thousands of years, waiting for this moment, waiting for the eye to be opened from the blood and the murders that Jack was carrying out.
I have a really stupid idea, but then again, I am in the midst of a bout of madness.
You are. In fact, that is a very good point, because you all now need to make a sanity roll as well.
Oh, yes.
For seeing Biatis.
Yeah, this isn't going to go well.
I had my eyes shut. Can I have a bonus dice?
Okay. Wally.
Can I use Fighting Brawl?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. If you want to go and have a fight with Biatis, go for it, man. Go for it.
Yeah, hard success. Father took me to very inappropriate places as a child. I've seen things no 10-year-old should ever see. So...
Amazing. And Rita?
Well, I rolled 32 against 61.
Well, that's fine. That's a pass, then.
Yeah, I mean, and if I spent some luck, I could have a hard... But it doesn't matter, does it, really?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't make any difference. So, those of you that passed...
I've just realised, Andy, I don't have to roll. I'm in the midst of a bout of madness.
You are, aren't you? You are.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's only Milton, then. So, yeah, somehow you're breezing through this. I mean, you did summon him, after all. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is all part of the plan.
So, Wally and Rita, you need to roll a d6.
All right.
You might be about to have bouts of madness if you roll badly here.
It's a 6.
Wow.
It's a 6.
Okay, you both need to make intelligence rolls. And if you pass, you're going to have a bout of madness as well.
Ah, crap. Ah!
Oh, yes.
What about intelligence, right?
That was an extreme.
Yes. Intelligence roll, Rita.
Ooh, 99.
No way. All right, Rita. I don't know. Well, tell me, how does this not make you go completely off the deep end, seeing this snake-bearded, toad-like, gargantuan monstrosity coming up out of the bowels of London?
Well, I tell you what, because I haven't done my attempt at a voice this evening, because it's all been action, action, action. I tell you this, my great-grandmother was, when I was young, I used to think she was some kind of giant toad, and she used to have this, I think it was something like a feather boa, you know, and there were all these feathers sticking out of it. And it kind of looked like these tentacles. And, you know, she used to make me light her cigarettes for her and get all those kinds of things for her. You know, I had to go and get her Bible, had to go and bring her a lunch, bring it back, get her drinks, you know, all kinds of things. You know, sometimes I'd have to go down the pub and get her a pint and take it back to the house. So it's just like seeing my great-grandmother again.
Fantastic. Your family. Yeah, so you're fine. You're both free to act in this round. But Milton, you need to roll a d20.
Oh, okay.
And what comes up? What comes up?
D20, come on.
Ooh, 9.
9.
Well, I mean, that is enough. That's enough to make you indefinitely insane anyway. So you are going to have a bout of madness.
I think that's fitting.
I think that is fitting. You lose 9 points of sanity. And, well, I mean, what? You can either roll randomly or... Actually, no, the point is you're being hypnotized to walk forward. So I would say if you can break out of the hypnosis, that's the point at which the bout of madness will kick in, because you're sort of being controlled now.
Sorry, how much comes off my sanity? Not that it's going to matter.
9.
Right, right.
So you go down to 35 san.
35, yeah.
And you can still hear Jack's voice in your ear saying,
"Don't get too close to the Berkeley toad, Milton. What are you doing? He's going to devour you. I need you to stay alive."
And he materializes by your side, and he's going to use an action to attack Biatis. But
wow.
The first thing that happens is Biatis is going to try and drag one or more of you down into the hole with him. So it's between Milton, Drummel, Fletcher, and Bowers. There's 4 of you left. So 2 of you are going to be attacked. So the first one is Bowers. Ooh, well, Milton, you have been lucky. You have been lucky.
More right, Jack.
Because 2 massive snake-like beard tentacles come shooting out and try and wrap themselves around Bowers and Fletcher. Let's see. Well, I guess they're hypnotized, so I don't think they can fight back. But we'll see whether the tentacles manage to get around them. Oh, yes, that's an extreme on Bowers, and that's a regular success on Fletcher. And you see these huge, thick, muscular appendages whip out and wrap themselves around the waist and legs of Bowers and Fletcher, and then drag them screaming into the hole. Now, what would the 3 who are not having a bout of madness... Well, actually, I suppose, Emery, you are having a bout of madness, but you're still sort of somehow able to act. So, starting with Emery, let's say, what would you like to do at this point?
Yeah, like I say, I've had a very stupid idea, which I'm going to go ahead with, which is I need to save Milton here, and the way I'm going to do it is to run ahead of him, try to get in front between him and Biatis, pull the medallion out from around his neck and stick it in front of his eye so that he sees something more wholesome, or at least something more to his liking than this infernal pool that is dragging him towards his destruction.
Fantastic. I love that idea. Yeah, you're not going to have to make a roll for this. It's pretty straightforward. So you delve into... You shove your hand down down Milton's shirt front, and between the sweaty folds of his man breasts...
Pushing bits of black pudding out of the way.
Crumbs of black pudding. You brush them out, and in the sweat-drenched cleavage, in Milton's sweat-drenched cleavage...
Okay.
Your hand closes around the sharp edges of the amulet, and you pull it out and hold it up like a monocle in front of Milton's eyes. And Milton, what you see through this is the truth of what's going on. You somehow see beyond the confines of this Roman tomb with the buried god. You see the struggle of eons. You see Egonalak, you see Biatis, you even see the old god Nodens locked in eternal conflict. And somehow you can use this to extricate yourself in this situation. Egonalak is no friend of Biatis, and although you've never encountered Nodens before, he's somehow wrapped up in all of this as well. Something to do with ancient London. And consequently, I'll let you make another power roll right now. And it only needs to be a hard success, because you can see clearly the way out of this mess. Unfortunately, that is not a hard success, but maybe you can feel that the hold that Biatis has on you slightly weakening, and if you can somehow avoid being grabbed by its tentacles, maybe you can survive. But what are the others doing, Wally and Rita?
Well, actually, am I having a bad badness? Because I did actually, unfortunately, get an extreme success on that intelligence roll after rolling a 6.
We completely forgot to do that. Yes, so Wally.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at this point, Wally has been through quite a bit. I think she's actually just going to, like, running and screaming is really the most likely thing that she's going to do. I mean, like, let's be honest. She's an upper-class twitch. Her dexterity is 30. She's probably wearing very impractical shoes right now, you know? I mean, she's and she's underground. She's running and screaming, absolutely, looking for the exit.
It's going to be some great running, isn't it? It's going to be great running.
Yeah, no, it's like those little, like, tee-tee-tee-tee-tee-tee. Like, she's got her little hands kind of flapping in the air as she runs. It's very undignified.
Absolutely. So roll d10 to see how many rounds this fleeing in panic. I think it's moot, because once you've got out, I don't think you'll necessarily want to go back in, but let's see.
Oh, absolutely not, no.
Oh, it's a full 7 rounds. As you desperately search for a way out, and maybe you find this ancient stairwell, a spiral staircase going up, perhaps up from the Roman layers into the Anglo-Saxon layers and beyond, as you push your way through the dirt-encrusted passageway, absolutely ruining your shoes, of course. But you're fleeing. Rita, what about you?
So we went through the compacted layers of underground London, and we found ourselves in a chamber.
Yes.
And there's a staircase which leads to other earlier, later ages. So it's all been conveniently maintained by some cult of something like that.
Seemingly, yes.
So what else is in this room? We've got the trapdoor.
Maybe there's some statuary or blocks of marble or something.
Okay, so rough-hewn marble and statuary.
Sure.
Okay, and as Biatis pulled these the other two into the trapdoor, does that mean Biatis is gone?
No, definitely not. Biatis seems to be very big and underneath the ground where you're standing, and it seems to be wanting to drag you down to satiate its hunger. It seems like it's not had a meal in a long, long time.
So I sense Biatis under the ground everywhere. What role does the trapdoor play?
Oh, that was just the door opening. The door was opened.
Okay. And who is in danger? Is Milton still going towards Biatis, or...?
I would say, given the length and mobility of these snake beard tentacles, you're all in danger at this point.
Oh, right. Cool. Okay. Does Biatis have... Well, obviously, Biatis has an eye. Is it a big eye?
It's a very big eye, yes.
Like, is it the size of me, the eye?
Probably, at least. I mean, you're not quite sure how big Biatis really is, but judging by the size of the tentacles, you'd assume the whole thing is many hundreds of feet.
Okay. Well, I think Rita... Has Rita still got her gun?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think Rita's going to, you know, take the lesson of this episode, this scenario, and just leap towards Biatis and just shove the gun right into the pupil of the eye and just fire the gun off.
Three times?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Do you actually want to dive into the opening or just to the edge? You will see the eye as soon as you...
I've got to ram the gun onto the iris or onto the lens of the eye.
Pupil, yeah.
The pupil, well...
Okay, so Rita, you run forward and then you just tumble and dive through the trapdoor, pushing Milton and Emery out of the way. And you fall perhaps 30 feet down and land right in the squishy centre of this eye. It must be about 10 feet across... I would say that even though you're not having a bout of madness, you sort of are having a bout of madness by your decision-making.
Yeah, but Rita, isn't Rita just always having a bout of madness?
I think so.
Yeah, this is her baseline, really.
Average Wednesday afternoon.
And you can't miss.
Yeah, all the kind of lake swimming that she did as a child. She's kind of doing the pencil type of dive, you know, feet first, whatever. And on making that contact, it's really that... into the lens.
It's like landing on a waterbed, on a gelatinous waterbed. You feel the liquid inside this eye sort of swishing and swirling around.
I hope it pops.
And then you ram the gun into the centre, and you can't miss, but we'll see whether you can get an extreme roll on any of the three shots. So just roll three times.
Do I get a bonus dice on any of these?
Yes, because it's large, so you get one bonus dice.
Well, every time?
Each time, yeah. You're point blank and it's large.
Can't miss. Can't miss. Okay.
So this is just to determine whether you can actually get an extreme.
Okay, that's a 33 against 50. Let me re-roll. That's another 30. So the first one is 33 against...
That's a regular.
50. Can I spend luck on that?
You can, but you would need to spend a lot to get an extreme. You need to get it down to a 10.
Yeah, I need to spend 23.
So you've only got 8 luck left, I think, didn't you say?
I think I probably did say that. Yeah, all right. Okay, I won't do that one. Okay. Okay. Oh, it's a 77 so far. Oh, it's a 97 that time. This is bollocks.
I mean, these are going to hit, but none of them are going to be impales.
85, 75. What a load of crap.
Okay, well, none of them are impales, and the gel covering, the cornea of this eye is so thick that your bullets... don't impact it in the way you wish, but roll 3d10 and we'll see whether you can do any damage at all.
I never put enough rat poison in my great-grandmother's tea.
It's a lesson for us all there.
No half measures.
That's what she always used to say. No half measures. I've rolled a 2 and a 1 and a 4.
Well, sadly, Rita, your bullets have done nothing. You can see them just like lodged maybe a couple of inches down into this gel. And Biatis, it's like, I suppose, being bitten by a mosquito. Maybe a little bit irritating, but certainly not enough to cause any damage.
Rita is stamping on this jelly.
And then a form lands next to you, Rita. It's Jack. It's the shadowy form of Jack the Ripper. And you see his glittering cutthroat razor in his hand as he opens it up and he says...
Now, this is how you do it, girlie.
And he slices downwards with his cutthroat razor. And let's see.
Is he an apparition or is he corporeal?
He sort of somewhere in between. He can make himself manifest, let's say, which he is now. He is now, even though he's still quite shadowy.
So he didn't really need Milton. He didn't really...
He's a meaty ghost.
A meaty ghost. Didn't need Milton, really. It was just for fun.
The heart wants what it wants.
So he gets a regular success, but his blade is somewhat special. So let's see. Ooh, he does 9 damage. And to your wonder, you see this blade just slice clean through a few layers of this eye, and fluid starts squirting upwards, covering both of you in ocular fluid, if that's what it's called, in eye jelly.
Aqueous humour.
And aqueous humour comes squirting up out of the wound and splattering all over you, and this giant form underneath you starts to roil and ruck in obvious pain.
This has to be in slow motion. You know, Rita's like getting covered in all of this stuff. It's like some wet t-shirt competition, and Jack the Ripper's just going like, oh, yeah.
Okay, now Milton, you can make another power roll at this point. You had your extra one. You still need to get a hard success, so let's see whether you can break. No, unfortunately not. What I didn't mention, and maybe Rita, as you're being tossed around, you're thrown to the edge of the eye, and you can see the remains of Bowers and Fletcher as they're being consumed in one of the many toothed maws of Biatis. The tentacles drew them in, and he's just devouring them, and then the tentacles shoot upwards.
Rita's just laughing in slow motion, ecstatically, as they're getting, bits of them are getting chomped up. And
this time, there's only two of you. Well, actually, no, because Emery is now in there with them. So one of you will not be targeted by a tentacle. So Milton is one or two, Emery is three or four, and Drummel is five or six. Oh, it's Drummel who is not targeted.
Oh, God.
So Milton, do you want to call on one last time on your master, on your dark passenger, as this tentacle wraps itself around you and you feel yourself being drawn down into this hole, into this terrible pit, and you can see the vile form of Biatis beneath you, and you can see Rita and Jack fighting valiantly to send it back whence it came.
It looks like a pool party in slow motion. That's what it looks like. We're running through sprinklers or a fountain or something.
Did I just yell out, Igonolak?
So you yell out Igonolak to come and save you, which, I mean, will he? But so what I'll let you do...
Probably not.
...is I'll let you try and make a spontaneous Cthulhu Mythos roll to see whether you can bring Igonolak to your aid. I'll give you a bonus dice because you are connected to him.
Right.
So hit Cthulhu Mythos with a purple.
Cthulhu Mythos, the purple.
Oh my goodness me. Wow. Well, on a 15, you rolled a 12. You didn't even need the bonus dice. And as you're being drawn down towards this moor, a couple of things happen. First, you break out of the hypnosis. So you are going to get a chance to try and wrestle yourself free from the tentacle. But the other thing that happens is that the large headless form, the pink fleshy headless form of Igonolak, starts materializing on top of Biatis as well. And without understanding or really knowing, on some deep level, you realize that Igonolak wants you to live as well. And so Igonolak is also going to try and cut through this large eye, cut through the thick cornea of this eye and send this creature back. So can you make that strength roll? You need to make an opposed strength roll against this tentacle, and you need to roll really high.
Will I be forming little hand mouths to assist me in doing this?
Absolutely. I would say that will give you a bonus dice, as little mouths appear on your hands that are biting into the tentacle.
Right, okay.
So this would be a strength roll.
Strength roll.
And you will get a bonus dice on it.
Okay. Is that a purple one I rolled in?
Yes, it is. It is. Yes. Oh, my God. Wow. And that's what you needed. You needed an extreme success. And again, you didn't even need the bonus dice. So as you are being pulled inexorably towards this moor and you can see your end approaching, some insane remnant of Igonolak's strength floods through your body and you just tear the tentacle off you as your hand teeth sink into it and the tentacle just recoils backwards towards the main body and you fall heavily to the floor, to the dirt floor next to this vast form. And you are free and able to act next round. Emery, on the other hand, we will see what happens to Emery as this tentacle comes towards him. Remember, you are the king of the dodge, aren't you?
I know, yes. dodgy old geezer.
As this tentacle comes towards you, that is a regular success. So you just need to get a regular success on your dodge.
Okay.
Ooh.
And that is a regular success.
That is a regular success. And maybe it was the pain of all the wounds that Biatis is taking from the combination of Jack's blade and Rita's mosquito bite bullets and Milton's hand, mouth, teeth. But the tentacle just thrashes around, vainly searching for you, and then slithers back down into the hole to perhaps aid its master against these attackers. So, yes, you're free to do something now as well, Dr. Amory.
Oh, God. Yeah, I'm still in that bat of madness, though, and I think we've determined what the general theme of this bat of madness is. So, you see, the problem with Biatis, I think, is that at the moment he's just simply existing in too many dimensions.
Oh, he is, isn't he? He is, isn't
yeah.
he? Well, given that, I mean, the jury's out on whether he really is a great old one. Some people say he is, some people say he isn't. He's still pretty powerful, though.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, so in order to banish him, I suppose that's really what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I guess so.
Or at least turn him inside out, or I don't know, what are you trying to do with this?
Yeah, I mean, Emery hasn't thought through the minute details of all this. At the moment, it's, you know, he's got this spell bouncing around in his mind. He knows it does something with dimensions. It's always been predictable in the past. And if ever there was a time to try using it, this is it. The details will sort themselves out in the casting.
Right. So, yeah, make a power roll then.
Okay. Oh, that was a good time to roll 100.
Ouch.
Oh, brilliant.
Well, that is a fumble.
Yes.
That is a fumble. I mean, I don't think there's much point in me rolling for Biatis, but I will anyway to see what he gets. Well, he got an 89, which isn't great, but it's still a pass because he does have a lot of power. Now, you just fumbled your spellcasting roll.
I did.
Which doesn't mean it doesn't work.
Oh, no, that would be boring.
It just means something really bad happens. It just means something really bad happens as well. And I really should have made you all make a sanity roll for seeing Igonalak again, but let that one ride. Let's let that one ride.
Is anyone not having a bat of madness at the moment?
I don't... No, that's true. That's true. So, you start to fold in the edges of space and time, like you have done many times before, and it seems to be going so well. It seems to be going really, really well, because you can almost start to sense Biatis being twisted round and sent downwards into older and lower layers of history, maybe even sent backwards in time because you've cast this spell so well. But something has gone a bit wrong, and you feel like you've done it, that you've sent him away, that you've put him into another space, another time. But that was just, let's say, a subjective observation. Because objectively, you've actually sent yourself
indeed
away to another space and time. Perhaps a space and time where all you can hear is the mad piping and the cosmos stretched out before you. And the taste in your mouth reminds you of the space mead that you once drank. And we will leave Emery there floating around the nuclear chaos that is Azathoth at the heart of the universe.
Oops.
But maybe one day you'll learn how to play those pipes and everything will work out for the best.
Actually, you know the best part of this, Andy? Because Emery is still in the midst of this bout of madness, he doesn't have to make that D10 D100 side roll.
Fantastic.
That would just be too reductive, wouldn't it? It would just be too reductive.
The rest of you see Emery just blink out of existence. And at the same time, with a lurching, nauseating feeling, Rita on top of Biatis and along with the monstrous forms of Igonalak and Jack, you get tossed from one side to the other as there seems to be a tremor, an earthquake going underneath you. And Biatis is drawn down into the earth and will make one last attempt to devour each of you. Wally, of course, by this point, is up in the Regency lair.
Ooh, nice. Guild.
But you will get one chance here, Rita. One chance here, Milton. as the tentacle comes lashing in to drag you down to wherever Biatus is being drawn to. So,
what am I rolling here?
Milton, that is a hard success. You need to make a hard dodge roll.
Dodge?
Hard dodge roll. Right. I'll tell you, that's...
And you don't mean an extreme. You mean a hard one, do you?
Yes, I mean a hard one. Well, no, because I haven't rolled for you yet, Rita. This is for Milton. And your dodge is what, 20? Oh, no.
22 is dodge, but no good.
And Milton, the last thing you see as you're dragged down into the earth is Jack looking down at you from the edge of this pit and just sort of shaking his head in disappointment as you feel the teeth of Biatis clamp around your middle and you're torn to pieces. And Rita, that is also a hard success. You need to make a hard dodge roll as well.
Well, I got 45 in dodge, so that's 22. Need to beat 22.
You need to beat 22.
That's an 85.
Blimey, this is just carnage. Rita as well. You feel this tentacle wrap itself around your legs, and it whips you off your feet and drags you down into the pit as well. And then you feel a searing pain, and then all goes black. Wally.
Yeah.
A little while later, you emerge blinking into the sunlight. I said this is how it would end.
I'm the final girl. This is how it's supposed to end.
Fantastic. And when you turn back to look at the foul, sulfurous hole that you crawled up out of, it just seems to close up. And all that's left of the cobbled streets of London, slick with rain. And your friends are nowhere to be seen.
I think that I need to step into an alleyway to vomit first. This has been the most intense couple of days that I've ever spent.
It is indeed. It is indeed.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Gibberish. Talking gibberish.
Yes, you are. And a little while later that day, you head back to Watson's Antiquities. And for the first time ever, Mel Pemany seems to be not trying to scratch your eyes out or leave deep gouges in your arm. And in fact, she walks up to you and rubs herself against your leg and curls her tail around your calf and looks up with a look of sadness and love into your face. And maybe occasionally, just occasionally, when Mel Pemany does go and have a sniff at that brandy in your glass or try and take a lick of the wine, you feel that perhaps a little bit of Emery is still there with you. And I think that is the end. I mean, that really is the end.
Yeah.
Super. And I'm very good. I don a sock.
I'm in the clock. An apple cart. A broken heart. Jack. Come back.
Sausage maker becomes the sausage. I hope you choke. You choke.
He'll patch up your troubles and go on his way, singing toodle-loom-a-loom-a-toodle-ay, toodle-loom-a-loom-a-toodle-ay, any umbrellas to mend today.
Umbrellas to mend, umbrellas to mend.
Oh dear, that didn't quite go right, did it? What the devil is going on? Why is everything dark all of a sudden? It's terribly cold, isn't it? It shouldn't be this cold in London, even at this time of year. What is that terrible piping sound? No. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Please keep that piping down. It's very difficult to think like that. And oh my goodness, what is that? Nothing should twist like that. Nothing. My goodness. That. What is that seething mass? Why are there things writhing around it? Why is... It's... Oh, God. It's vast. It's... Oh, Emery, you've really done it this time.
Listen, big boy, now that you got me made.
Wow, okay. Took the gloves off there, didn't I? I wasn't necessarily expecting that to happen.
Well, it wasn't a total party kill, so, you know.
It wasn't.
And to be fair, we were kind of asking for it.
Yeah, that's the thing, because, you know, I've played many a game of Cthulhu, and, you know, running and screaming is often your best move.
It is. We obviously don't have time to do the wrap-up or the post-game, because I'd actually like to do a discussion about, like, the whole arc and where we got to at some point. But just some quick thoughts, maybe, on the end of Book Hounds. And
at what point did you diverge from the pre-published scenario, Andy?
The point at which the ground opened up after the blood, when the blood went into the book, at that point, that's where I diverged. There's no Biatis in the actual scenario. I mean, obviously Biatis is in it, but there's no encounter with Biatis. So pretty much that was the only major diversion. I think there was a bunch of stuff that you did that was very divergent, obviously. The kidnapping and torture of the Castries was something that just sort of emerged. You know, and a bunch of other things that you got up to. I think that obviously the whole interaction with Jack was pretty much emergent as well. That's not really something that would typically happen, but I think it was perfect for Milton.
But it's probably never a good sign in a game when you end up feeling really sorry for the antagonists and what you've done to them.
That is true. Yeah, I think you've done more wicked deeds than they have combined. I don't know.
Oh, yes.
Certainly think Milton being eaten was poetic justice.
I think it was.
Nice way to go.
And who knows, maybe Emery can come back from the edge of the universe. I don't know.
I was thinking that we're going, depending on whether we're going high pulp or not in the next game, having a version of Emery who has come back from the Court of Azathoth could be quite fun to play.
I think that could be good.
Really old and really ripped.
It really could. Right.
He comes back on a, like, Flash Gordon spaceship from the edge of the universe, and he's just wearing a loincloth.
Just wearing pants, yeah, and he's just greased up, completely greased up. Got a massive bonus on that dodge rolls, just like...
Riding a bayaki and waving a flute around like a sword.
Amazing. I think that's got to happen. Yeah, I think we got enough out of Rita in those various games to make it an okay end for her as well, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, yeah.
I think her kill count is quite high, so she did the business.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, you killed one man 3 times, didn't you? Or was it just twice?
Oh, fucking Deke Thornton, yeah, fucking Deke Thornton.
Well, thank you. I've got to say, I mean, we can discuss this in the proper after show, but I got to say, in this book counts, there's so much extraneous stuff that probably wasn't necessary, but it kind of helped to add a layer of richness and interest that wouldn't have been there without it. But the core storyline is actually pretty straightforward. You're trying to get a book, you go to an auction, and then bad stuff happens. But I think we did some nice stuff around the edges.
Yeah, I guess as it was written, though, it wasn't the assumption that most of the bad stuff would be coming from us.
Yes.
That is true.
I suppose the feeling of having to, I don't know, get it going, it just always felt like we were kind of really just starting, and the auction is meant to be coming in 3 days' time or something. I mean, that was a long fucking 3 days.
It was.
Yeah, I think the difference is, out of all the scenarios that we've played together, this was by far the most investigative. And I think as a group of characters, investigation isn't really our forte. Blundering around, pissing off NPCs and getting ourselves into trouble, that's what we excel at.
Absolutely.
But the whole thing with, you know, the film in the last one, there was some great investigation with that, and that was a lot more, yeah, okay, this, figuring stuff out, going to different places.
Because, well, that one is structured more like, you know, a film noir investigation, so that's why it kind of works in that way. This one is...
What was this? Like a Dickensian...
This is sort of a Dickensian Edwin Drood or something, I don't know. But you're right, we've actually... This is the 16th session we've done, which is a lot for one of our scenarios. The first one was just 4, and then I think we did 7 in the Surrey Enigma. So 16 is a lot, given that there wasn't anywhere near as much action as in some of them. But anyway, I've really actually enjoyed it. I think I've enjoyed the milieu and the setting as much as anything, and just being in London. So,
oh, yeah, yeah.
And I think fitting ends for most of you, for all of you, perhaps. We never did find out what happened to Hamp and Nora, but perhaps that's best left a mystery.
Or maybe it'll serve the basis for a sequel someday.
Indeed, indeed. I've definitely got an image of Ham eating cockroaches in Bedlam Asylum. That's where I had him placed in my head. The blues in their
heart. But when I think of you, another shower starts into each life. Some rain must fall, but too